Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You've tuned in to Sci-Fi Fidelity, episode 49, The Order.
Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. It's Mike and Dave with you once again, talking about yet another supernatural show. We've been kind of away from science fiction for a while, Dave, here. The Order is lots of magic, not in the same way as the witch shows that we've been doing, but it's really got a formula that looks like it's derivative and is definitely not.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously our roots are in sci-fi. This podcast is called Sci-Fi Fidelity, but it's just difficult to ignore these really intriguing shows that seem to be popping up, especially on Netflix these days.
And this one is kind of near and dear to our hearts from the people that are involved behind the scenes. I mean, obviously this is filmed in Vancouver, but it's also produced by Nomad Pictures, which produces Van Helsing. It put out Ghost Wars, and there's some people also that were involved from that production company on Continuum, which is how we got our start in podcasting. And one of the executive producers on The Order is also a member of the Continuum writers room. So that also drew us to it.
Right. And you're, of course, referring to Shelley Erickson, who also wrote 7 episodes for Continuum. The show was co-created with Dennis Heaton. You know, you mentioned Sci-Fi's Ghost Wars, and they've put together a season of 10 episodes, which dropped on Netflix March 7th, 2019. And Mike, you know, it seems as if each week we're breaking our 2-episode rule.
And yeah, that's true. Well, it's Netflix. That's why.
All right. And if you're new to the podcast, what Michael and I have sort of settled on doing is looking at the first 2 episodes of a new series to really give you guys a sense of what it's like, and then you can decide whether or not you want to move forward. So I'm sure some of you are listening to the podcast having seen the entire season, and that's great.
But this time we're actually just going to be also talking about, I guess, 3 episodes, because we needed to get the werewolves in there, right?
Yes, we're going to talk about the first 3 episodes. So let's go ahead and get right to it, because the general premise, and they really lay out a lot of subplots in the first 3 episodes, but I guess the central core plot element revolves around Jack Morton, who has set his sights on gaining acceptance to Belgrave University and ultimately acceptance into the secret hermetic order of the Blue Rose. And what we come to learn is that this is merely the first step in a 5-year plan to exact revenge on his father, Edward Coventry, whom he blames for his mother's suicide. And at the beginning, it's just he killed his mother. And, you know, slowly we learn it's not quite that simple and may not even be true for all we know.
Right. And it isn't even 100% Jack's plan anyway. It's his grandfather's plan, because his mother, his grandfather's daughter, was the one that was killed. And they both are seeking revenge. But I get the sense that the grandfather is the one that's steering the ship. And of course, Dave's going to go over some of the characters here as part of the premise as well. And then we will hit the spoiler zone button. Hopefully, if you are listening this far, you are maybe being enticed to watch the show, but we'll also share some nitty gritty after the spoiler zone begins for those of you who have seen the show.
Right. So let's bring up Jack Morton, class of 2023 at Belgrave University. And he's played by Jake Manley, who you might know from Heroes Reborn or iZombie. Unfortunately, 2 shows that I don't watch. Alyssa Drake, played by Sarah Gray from Legends of Tomorrow. And they're sort of the 2 protagonists. Would you say that's fair?
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, it centers around, or it anchors itself really, with the chemistry between these two, which is spot on. I mean, you got to give them big credit for bringing these two together.
Right. And the chemistry, though, with his grandfather, Peter Morton, who he refers to as Pops, played by Matt Frewer. What a perfect casting choice.
Well, he's a genre royalty at this
point.
Oh,
yes.
Right?
We know him from The Librarians, Dr. Leakey in Orphan Black. He was also in Timeless. And he plays his character like he plays so many of his character, that he's not a good guy, but it's hard to hate him.
Yeah, that's right. And it's funny, too, because you would think that it would come across as the same character each time, but it is pretty unique. This character feels different, feels like kind of a nutty conspiracy theorist type guy.
Right. And there's a lot that he clearly knows that he has not articulated yet, maybe to Jack as well as the audience. And certainly that's a compelling aspect of the story at this point.
For sure.
Now, the other character that I really love is Dean Vera Stone, played by Catherine Isabel, who was in Hannibal. And a show that's not genre, but I love it, The Arrangement with Lexa Doig. And that's the way they should bill it, The Arrangement with Lexa Doig.
We only watch it because Lexa is in it.
Exactly. And then Edward Coventry, who is Jack's father and supposedly drove his mother to suicide. And then Professor Clark. And I'm watching it the whole time. It's like, where do I know this guy from?
Yeah. Well, isn't it funny that here we have a show that includes werewolves in addition to magic users, and Sam Trammell, who plays Professor Clark, was a shapeshifter in True Blood, right?
Yes.
So that's kind of in the same vein.
Right. So in terms of characters, we'll go ahead and leave it there for now. I think we've hit on the main characters. I mean, I guess we could include Randall, who is Jack's resident assistant in the dorm.
I like including him for another reason, too. We just had Brittany Curran on the podcast last week for The Magicians, and those people who watched that show couldn't help but notice that Randall is played by the same actor that plays Todd in The Magicians, and it feels like almost the exact same character, so I thought that was a nice little touch.
Okay. All right, well, why don't we go ahead and enter the spoiler zone, so if you are not up on the show, you probably should go ahead and watch the first three episodes and then come back to the podcast.
You are now entering the spoiler zone.
So, all right, Mike, let's talk about subplot one, which is really at the core, and that's this plan to avenge the death of Jack's mother. And we learn that his father, yeah, at first we think, oh, is his father in prison? Why is he yeah. living with his grandfather? And, you know, there's this vague sense of what really happened there. But the overarching theme that maybe I'm reading this in and it's not really there, but do you get the sense that his mother may have been a practitioner of magic?
I don't know. That's a good question. And maybe I didn't pay close enough attention. But certainly there's the idea that the father is involved in magic somehow, because that's why he needs to join the order. But yeah, maybe the mother too.
Yeah, because part of the 5-year plan is for Jack to gain an invitation into the order. And as it turns out, his father is apparently the head of the order, right? He's the Grand Magus.
Right.
And does Jack know that going in? Certainly his grandfather seems to know it.
Yeah, I feel like they know it. They've done their research. And I love that board that comes out, you know, because they don't spell it out all for you right at once. The 5-year plan comes out later and you're like, oh, wow, okay, I see. This isn't just about getting into the university, because, you know, it was touch and go there. The letter of rejection came through until Vera kind of magicked it into an acceptance letter. And I like how Jack doesn't even react. He's like, oh,
I'm in.
I got accepted after all.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing about his grandfather. He sees the ability to use magic as a way to get back at Jack's father. And again, for me, I'm at first assuming, all right, we're going to use magic and do something bad to him. But obviously, as the story unfolds and we see that his father is at the center of the order and a magic practitioner himself, things get a little bit more complicated.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. I don't know if they knew that already, but certainly the fact that they knew anything at all, because this order is very secretive and are clearly able to erase the memory of anyone they encounter that they don't want to know about them.
Right, which is another fascinating subplot that we'll get to in a little bit. But I guess I still wonder how much Pops really knows about the Order, because it seems as we go along, and Jack is, I think, getting the sense as well that Pops is holding out some information on him. And, you know, as you said at the top of the discussion, the grandfather is all in on this revenge plot. Jack, while he may have been in at the beginning, and maybe he was in, you know, it sounded good on paper.
Right.
But now that I'm into it, maybe this is not what I want to do.
Yeah, because he starts to see the whole culture of it, the people who are participating in it, and how he could use it to do some good in the world versus, you know, just going after vengeance.
Right. Now, subplot number two involves Jack's initiation into the Order of the Blue Rose. And as you mentioned, at first he's rejected to Belgrave. And then, of course, the Dean magics it into an acceptance letter. And at first he gets rejected by the Order of the Blue Rose, but then that ends up working out in his favor. But I love the meet cute scene with Alyssa Drake, who is the tour leader.
Oh, that is the best use of meet cute I've heard in a while. So, yes, I agree.
And she's doing the tour. Jack's part of the group. And almost immediately, he starts correcting her. He starts adding a lot of relevant information that clearly she's leaving out. And in fact, he says something one time, and you see her looking down at her notes, because clearly she's not prepared all that much, because she figures nobody really cares. They just want to get this tour. It's probably required. Get it over with. Let me get back to my dorm.
Yeah, it sets up the chemistry very nicely from the very start.
Exactly. But we also, though, get a sense that Belgrave Hall, for instance, has been haunted by multiple ghosts over the year. We hear about the Screaming Lady. But it's that mention of a secret society and the rumors of a hidden basement that catch not only our attention, but Jack's as well.
Right. And of course, Alyssa, we find out later, but she does have a little bit of indication on her face that how does he know these things? He's not supposed to know these things. And she's trying to play it cool.
Right. Now, why Chancellor Stone has become such a supporter of Jack's acceptance as an order candidate isn't immediately clear.
Yeah, that's true.
And again, I go back to, what do we know about his mother? Clearly, we know about his father. We assume that Dean Stone knows that Jack's father is at the head of the order.
Well, no, I don't know, because I think certainly that's not a well-known fact that Jack is related in any way to Edward Coventry. In fact, Edward himself doesn't find that out until the finale. So,
well, that's true. Now, in terms of invitation into the Blue Order secret society, obviously we've got some sort of a trial, some sort of an initiation, and seven are summoned, three will be selected. And there's a lot of plot details in these episodes that are really apropos for what's going on in the real world with the college scandal involving parents paying to have their kids accepted. And that works out a little bit here, but at least one of the seven is a legacy and assumes that he's automatically going to be taken into the society, you know, leaving only two open spots. And of course, that's not exactly the way things work out.
Well, it's interesting, too, that they just initially, as soon as Jack gets to the campus, some fraternity tries to bring him on as a pledge. They see how ridiculous it is for them to be holding candles and wearing robes. And then they immediately go into the order's initiation, which is just as much hazing as the Greek system. So I found that interesting that they set up this ridiculous example. And somehow, I don't know how it works, but the initiation process for these pledges, or these novices, I guess they're called, neophytes, is not ridiculous. Doesn't come across as ridiculous, even though it should, interestingly.
Yeah, and you know, he's immediately given a task. Well, all seven are given a task, and Jack is, of course, the one that solves it. And you know, there's a little bit of conflict there, but you know, the judges rule in his favor. But from the start, it's clear that Kyle, who is one of the members of the society already, why does he have it out for Jack? I mean, is it that he sees the chemistry with Alyssa?
I don't know. Well, see, that's the thing about the beginning of this series. I was not a huge fan of the pilot, and I thought it had some really cheesy interactions. I didn't really care for how trite the college kids, the popular kids, didn't like the new guy, the townie. I mean, you know, that's pretty much a very formulaic way of approaching it. But it just gets so good later that I don't know that I have an explanation for why Kyle hates Jack so much, because I don't know that there is a really good narrative reason for it. It just is expected of the situation.
Yeah. And it's something that continues. And of course, eventually there's good reason for Kyle to dislike him because of his relationship with Alyssa. But Jack follows him to Belgrave Hall. And I love, you know, the camera zooms in, established 1687. And I'm thinking, like, all right, that's kind of at the height of the Salem witch trials and all those sorts of things that are going on in the States at that time. He enters, investigates, and of course finds a hidden door. And again, you might say, okay, that's, he just happens to find it, knows to look for it. But
well, this is another show, just like Doom Patrol that we just talked about recently. It really follows the 3-episode rule that we say that all shows should be given that amount of time to grow into themselves before you judge them.
Right.
Because this episode really gets good by 3.
Right. And I guess what saves that scene for me is what he finds on the other side of the hidden door. And it's this well-appointed lounge. He observes the dean and others conducting a magic ritual using a dead girl's eyeball. And, you know, the whole idea, and I forget what sci-fi show it's from, you might remember, but trying to recover memories from a dead guy.
Yeah.
Usually they hook into his brain, but, you know, hooking into the optic nerve, I think we've seen that before. And okay, that's kind of cool in a gross kind of way. So,
yeah.
But we also encounter a golem. And all right, not necessarily part of Jack's initiation, but it turns out that way. And after he takes care of it, he's invited in. Everybody removes their masks, and of course, one of them is his dad. Now, he recognizes his dad, or does he? See, I mean, that's the thing. When we go back to his grandfather's, I don't know what to call it. We always call it a murder board, but
you know, investigation board.
Investigation board. So he knows they're after Edward Coventry, and I assume he recognizes him as his dad, but his dad doesn't know that he exists.
Right. Yeah, they recognize him right away, for sure. It was something that was burned into his memory, if not from childhood, from the board itself.
Right. So this was supposed to be his weapon against his dad, this ability to use magic. And here he finds out that his dad is now his boss as a member of the Blue Rose Society. So, yeah, that's kind of cool.
Right. And I think you mentioned the golem and the werewolves, of course, too. I felt that that was a kind of interesting misdirect. I'm not sure if it was successful or not. I think it was, for the most part, because the werewolf attacks were also going on simultaneously with the golem attacks. And I think the one that he caught up with just happened to be the golem that was picking off recruits, so that the legacy, or the person who wasn't necessarily doing as well on his own merits, could get in. His mother was sending the golem around, correct?
Right. And as you said, I guess we'll probably end up repeating it several times. If you only go by the pilot,
yeah,
I think you're going to be disappointed. And I certainly have you to thank to get me to keep going. I like the pilot, but episodes 2 and 3 really start pushing the show in another direction that is certainly not something that I expected. And subplot 3, the werewolf situation. Well, wait a minute. I thought we were talking about a bunch of college kids learning magic.
Right. And I love this, because if you had told me you're going to love this show because of the werewolves, I'd be like, you're high. It's not going to happen. But right. That's my favorite part. The werewolves are my favorite part of this show.
Right. And one of the first incidents with the werewolf that we are presented is when Kyle sets up Jack to get him to drop out of not only the initiation process, but probably drop out of Belgrave University as well. But a werewolf appears, and we don't know the significance at this point. And we're not even sure it's a werewolf. But obviously, as we learn more through the first three episodes, oh, okay. That's now, he's got a friend for a while, Amir, and yeah, they find one of the other initiates, Dre, badly wounded, and she dies before help can arrive. And of course, the question at that point is not who killed her, but what killed her. But Jack goes home to Granddad, and I guess he assumed that Granddad lives fairly close to campus.
Yeah, they're townies, as they say.
Okay, so he's dropping in on Granddad to help figure out what the monster might be. And, you know, after Jack describes the gruesome scene, you know, Granddad doesn't bat an eye. Sounds like you got yourself a werewolf problem.
Yeah, that's a very interesting thing about Pops, is that he blithely accepts magic, and they keep themselves so secret, even from their own potential initiates, that it seems strange that Pops would be so accepting and know so much.
Well, and that's what I love about his storyline, is that he knows so much more than he's let on.
Or that he should.
or that he should. Now, Jack starts assembling werewolf-killing weapons. We're fresh out of silver bullets, Kyle tells his granddad, who hands him a shotgun. It's okay, I know a guy.
I love that, too. It's like, there's so many good parts about the development of the show that, in terms of the humor. Like, even the silver bullets work to kill werewolves? Duh, they're bullets. Right. I think the girl said, Lilith says that at one point.
Right. So, you know, so Jack's going after, at this point, it's just some sort of a beast, and he runs into Alyssa, who's obviously doing the same thing. Unfortunately, Amir didn't heed Jack's warning fast enough, and he's now hanging bloody and dead in a tree. And I guess a lot of these scenes could be a lot more gruesome than they are. I think they've hit on the right amount of blood and gore.
Well, especially since they kind of took me down the same path that Dark did initially, where I thought it was going to be a horror show, you know, picking people off one by one and the monster in the woods. That's not what it's about. In fact, that only lasts during the exposition of this first season of the series.
Well, before we go too much further, why don't we take a break? And when we return, we'll see what happens when Jack enters that old abandoned house and what it is he finds inside.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, once he gets into the abandoned house and you know, there's a werewolf apparently inside the house. He opens that chest and some sort of fur pelt attacks him. And at first, okay, what the hell is going on here?
I know. Isn't that funny? That it seems so cheesy that werewolves would be created by pelts in a chest. But as they developed this idea of these basically spirits of named wolves choosing who wears their mantle is just awesome. I just love that.
Right.
You know, a different person is chosen generation to generation to be Silverback or to be Midnight or whoever. I love that.
Right. And this, everything changes in episode three. And, you know, as you said, he's now wearing Silverback's mantle. And we learn that there is a rival secret society, the Knights of St. Christopher. Jack is now a werewolf. And we learn that his R.A. Randall and two other werewolves are trying to bring him into their fold.
Right. And that's funny, too, because Randall had been helping him. And Jack was pleasantly surprised that he believed him on all the different magical causes of things that he was discussing and took it at face value. He said, man, this Randall guy's a good guy. Well, that's because he's a werewolf and knows all about magic. And that was a nice little twist on it. Not to mention the fact that calling them the Knights of St. Christopher makes them sound very holy. And for the werewolves to suddenly become the good guys, because you knew the magicians were a little bit sketchy anyway, but it's a really cool way to put it on its head by making the beast be the hero of sorts, or the arbiter of justice.
Right. And when Randall and what are the other two, Hamish and Lilith, are trying to explain to him that he's a werewolf, and he's of course skeptical, and then he barfs up the remnants of the deer he ate the night before. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Some of the best dialogue that's in this show is the humorous dialogue. It's not cheesy. It's not corny. It's just spot on.
Yeah. And I guess as the episode is going on, we learn that Jack's got a new problem, and that is controlling his wolf. And, you know, we see him get things under control by the end of episode three. But the other cool thing is that these werewolves are the sworn enemies of the Order. They call themselves the Defender of the Innocent, and they now know that Jack is in the Order. And again, did I read this wrong? It seems the werewolves are magic cops.
Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting, too, that they don't just accept it and bring him in and then that's it. There's a lot of internal strife. The very distinct personalities between Hamish and Lilith and Randall. And Randall's the only one that sees the opportunity here to have an inside man with the enemy.
Right. And while magic cops may not be as cool as time cops,
it's pretty close.
Yeah, pretty close. The fact that they sense when magic is being used is pretty cool. Now, we mentioned the golem, and as a subplot, I think it's probably here and now gone, and I doubt whether we'll revisit it.
So you think.
Okay.
How far did you get in this series?
Only episode three.
Oh, yeah. Gollum goes all the way through. So okay. Happy to report that that character, Clay, is amazing and deserves to be in season two if there is one.
And what a great name for a Gollum, Clay.
Yeah.
And, you know, we get the requisite out-of-focus camera shots from the killer's perspective as it's tracking its prey. And at this point, he's still with Alyssa as they're tracking down whatever it is that's out there killing other students. And Alyssa shows some restraint. And I love when Jack says, well, why didn't you just magic that thing? She's not that skilled yet.
Yeah, yeah.
So while she's not a neophyte, like he is, she's not that high up on the pecking order. And again, I forget that somewhere in my notes,
have all kinds of different titles for the different levels. Yeah.
Right. And we're starting to put two and two together why these other pledges are being killed. And it's, of course, so Gregory doesn't have the competition. I heard a term on TV today. We've always talked about helicopter parents hovering. The new term is bulldozer parents. They just plow away all the obstacles for their kids.
That's Gregory's mom.
Exactly. So Clay, who is Jack's roommate, and we know him, of course, from Travelers.
Oh, right. He was the actor. Historian, right?
You're right. I think his name was Kyle in that show.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay.
Of course, part of what we've got to figure out here is who created the golem, and that will lead us to, you know, the person that's killing and figure out, you know, why they're doing the killing. And of course, it's simply so her son can get in, Margaret Crane, that is. And she's in a very fulfilling scene, is basically taken away. Her son's taken away. And all right, score one for the good guys. Now, one of the other subplots, and on the one hand, I've got it fairly far down in our discussion, but it's something that's I'm sure, going to work its way through the entire season. And that's Jack and Alyssa's relationship, both personal and professional. Because as you said, the sexual tension is immediately established when we see that scene during the tour of the campus. And then once he learns, and it doesn't take him, again, long to figure out that she is in the society, even though she denies it. But there's a lot of electricity between the two of those. And again, not in an off-putting way.
Well, especially since I put in my spoiler-free review, which I had to crank out pretty quickly for Den of Geek. I only had seen, I think, the first three episodes at that point. And I had commented on, they're not rushing things. They're not immediately putting these two together. There's some flirtations going back and forth, but it's just kind of building the chemistry. And then I think, of course, by episode four or five, they actually are much more intimate. But it does still go back and forth all season long. I think they just played this relationship perfectly so that it wasn't just kind of a relationship drama heavy plot line. It just was very enticing, very believable. And I think a huge amount of the credit for that has to go to Alyssa, the actress who plays Alyssa, because she was just really good at hiding her attraction. And then when she turned away from Jack, the camera would show her kind of reacting to his hotness. I thought that was really well done.
Right. And there's so many hints that she gives. We don't know whether or not she's doing that on her own. Was she instructed by the dean to help him out? Through the first three, we don't really get to know that. And then, of course, in episode three, she tells Jack that she's now his tutor. Now, one of the other ideas that comes up, and you mentioned this a few minutes ago, is the altering of perception and memory.
And this is hugely important for the season as a whole.
So is this something that the Order is orchestrating?
Yeah. Yeah. It's usually used for getting rid of pledges that didn't make it. So if a neophyte fails the test, you blow some magic dust on them. They forget all about magic. They go about their college life as a regular student.
Right. And this is part of the Respondeo incantation, I assume.
Yeah, it's a very interesting thing because at first, and I think there's been some discussion about this on our Facebook group, where this might have been a little bit too powerful of a tool that could easily have been used at any point to, you know, further the cause of whoever, evil or good. And in fact, I guess I'll just go ahead and mention that the way it's used in the finale, which I guess I won't spoil that in case people haven't gotten that far, but the way it's used in the finale is a little bit tricky for me. I don't know that I loved how simple that magic dust was to use to set someone back to square one.
Well, through the third episode, I guess what is really intriguing for me is the fact that Grandfather, once he learns that they can, well, Jack tells him they can change the way people remember things. So now Jack's attitude about the revenge plot has clearly changed. Is that a result of something that's been done? So that's got to be in his granddad's head at this point.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I like that there's a questioning of what's real and what's not real in that sense. But it's not overplayed, but it does make you wonder.
Right. And then finally, I think any good magic show is going to examine what happens when magic is misused. And certainly any good magic college, I'm not a big Harry Potter fan. I assume that they instructed those kids in the proper use of magic. But that whole idea, using magic has consequences. And when Pops chokes on a cookie, when Jack uses magic to get him off his case, I think it really hits the nail on the head for Jack and maybe even opens his eyes to how much power really is at stake here.
That's interesting, too, because his fellow neophytes don't know what they're playing with. They found out these secret spells that can help them cheat on exams and get free money and all that kind of stuff. And Jack does use it, like you said, and realize that there are costs to using magic that way. But at the same time, his use of these simple spells helps him control the werewolf. He just casts the money-making spell over and over again as a way to practice his impulses where each time magic is used, the wolf wants to come out. So I thought that was a nice dual use for the misuse of magic.
Right. And it has been noted that his wardrobe has improved considerably, as have the contents of his dorm room. But
yeah, that's right.
Anything else you want to add to the discussion?
No, I mainly wanted to squeeze in my couched reaction to the finale, since I just saw it earlier today and wanted to just say they really set up a nice setup for season two. So I don't want to give the impression that I didn't like the ending. It's just that some of the things that were played with in terms of the magic dust, the memory dust, I don't know. Might have been a little bit too overplayed, but I'm anxious to see if this show gets renewed. I think it did gain a fair amount of following with almost no publicity, you know, for this show.
Yeah.
That I think it did gain a following. If only we could get ratings from Netflix, we would know, but.
Right. I was just going to say, there's just no way to tell other than social media, and that's difficult to tell. But if you're into magic, if you like the magicians, I think it, worth your time to check out at least the first three episodes of The Order, which is currently on Netflix.
Eminently bingeable, too, if you wanted to go that route.
So, all right, Michael, what do we got up next?
Well, next we're headed into April with a discussion of genre anthology shows, because in anticipation of Jordan Peele's The Twilight Zone revival, which is going to be a topic on the podcast, we've got Love, Death, and Robots on Netflix, which is an anthology animation series. So we're going to take a look at genre anthology shows, both past and present, to prepare for our discussion of The Twilight Zone. And hopefully our listeners will also participate on the Facebook group by sharing with us their favorite genre anthology shows. Just check out the Facebook group when that discussion thread comes up and share us your favorites. And Dave and I are each going to pick three to discuss for a discussion topic next week. But that's not until next Sunday, so that's going to be it for this episode of Sci-Fi Fidelity. Keep the discussion going on social media. You can follow Den of Geek on Twitter and Facebook at Den of Geek US, and we are at Sci-Fi Fidelity.
And in the meantime, we'd love it if you could rate and review this podcast wherever you access it. Be sure to send us your suggestions for future topics on social media or in an email to scififidelity@gmail.com.
Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.